Welcome to Live's a Pitch, the podcast where we pitch the best films that'll never get made. I'm Matt Turner.
And I'm Tom McGrath. And the game goes like this. We ask you, our devoted listeners, to come up with titles that you'd like to hear us pitch.
We then collaborate, coming up with story points, casting, and even marketing strategies.
Without further ado, this week's title is... This town ain't big enough for the 12 of us.
Okay.
Wait, God.
I understand that the reference is 2 of us, right?
Yeah.
But how, like, when you make it bigger,
yeah,
you kind of make the concept smaller and more literal. So, like, that means that the town is actually going to be too small for 12 people.
Someone's going to have to build some bunk beds.
Yeah, we're doing westerns this week.
Ooey, ooey, ooh.
That title from Charlie Gascoigne. Thanks for that one, Charlie.
Cheers.
And with us to pitch some rootin' tootin' western
shooting,
shoot, yeah, movies,
shooting,
yeah,
like a film, like a film.
Shooting a film. Get it?
Do you get it, Tom?
Oh gosh,
do you get it?
Yeah, I get it.
With us to pitch some western films are Alex, not safe for work, Keen,
hello,
and Bobby, LGB terrific Anderson.
Thank you very much
from the Strike Podcast. Amongst many other things, I think there's
too
many.
We'll have a little plug break of our own.
Yeah.
100 podcasts and shows and other.
And many more.
Yeah, we run the Sheffield Improv Jam. Strike has its own little improv group. We're part of a group called the Improlites. We've just shut down doors on our long-form improvised rom-com. We're working on something new, which is exciting.
Scriptless in Seattle.
Yes. Yeah. Award nominated. And yeah, we do the our own podcast.
Yeah.
And generally sit about in pubs and make wry comments about stuff.
So yeah, Charlie got in touch with us on facebook.com/Life's a Bitch podcast, where we ask for film titles every week based on a genre. Yeah, facebook.com/Life's a Bitch podcast, and Twitter, you can find us on @Life's a Pitch show as well.
Go over there every Friday, find out the genre, but just send us a pitch anytime you want. Because frankly, it doesn't have to be about the genre it's on. Just send us anything. We'll make it about the genre. We'll co-opt your idea.
We'll do the legwork, yeah.
Yeah, you have a really, really well-framed idea about how, like, an angel man's going to fly into space. And then we're going to be like, nah, actually, I think this is a political satire. Tom, do you want to do some honourable mentions?
Yes, that would be a great idea. From Joe Thompson, we've got A Horse With No Legs.
A touchy coming-of-age story.
Oh my god.
So Jim's about a kid, right, who has, or has, like, a horse that he grew up with. Like, he was born at the same time as the horse, obviously. Mm. And at some point, I don't know how quickly horses age. Quicker
than people.
Yeah. And it gets its legs blown off, but he's, like, desperately trying, like, you've got to stay with me, buddy. And he, like, somehow, like, stitching and stuff, like, keeps it alive. But then it's about him learning to let it go, because it's only going to live for like 20 years anyway. So he's going to have to. Like...
When you said stitching, I didn't think of the right thing to think of, and that was stitching up the wounds. I thought you meant he gets some sticks and shoves them in and then stitches them to the horse.
Well, I was going to say,
he could wander around.
That's incredibly touching. I take issue with letting go. Because I kind of feel like absolutely this happens, but then he decides to replace the legs with something better.
Wagon wheels?
Wagon wheels.
Chocolate biscuit or...
Yeah.
Or just genuine wagon wheels.
Disgusting chocolate biscuit.
genuine wagon wheels. It's the West.
Yeah, fair enough.
So how does this horse get his legs blown off? Well, there's a bandit nearby who always kills his victims by waylaying them on the road and blowing their horse's legs off with a shotgun. Before
with a shot,
yep, or dynamite.
Four separate shots.
Yeah. No. There's four of his posse have all got a single shotgun.
They come up like
pincer motion.
Visual, yeah, just sort of
on either side and then shoot towards each other.
Yeah. From an angle, shoot to angle the gun downwards. They went through a lot of posse members before they figured out the mechanics of it. But that's off screen.
Three of them have got peg legs themselves.
I have two questions up to now. Firstly, what is the name of this evil bandit? And secondly, who is he played by? Or she, I guess.
Yeah.
Calamity Jane. So she likes to calam knees.
To calam. One calam, I calam. You, he, she, or it calams.
Okay, so this boy, him and his mother and father, raised this horse alongside him and... The horse is his dad's, and his dad gets killed by these bandits, and they blow the horse's legs off. And he finds that he recovers the horse. He's like, "I'm going to take revenge on Calamity Jane."
Picks up the horse.
He rolls the horse.
Yeah, even better, like a big sausage. You roll the horse.
Yeah, but it's done. It's like a really touching montage. Yeah. With like incredibly emotional music,
like Sarah McLachlan playing in the background.
It's a
I'm going to go back to what he replaces the horse's legs with now that I know his dad has been shot as well.
Dad's arms and legs.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, this is monstrous.
Yeah, no, he takes his dad's arms and legs. And maybe, like, he could...
There's gonna be someone. Okay,
maybe he can remove his dad's head as well and replace that with the horse. The horse's head also gets removed.
No. It's gotta be the horse. Right. There's a surgeon.
It's too much for a kid's movie at this point.
Yeah, it's called a horse with no legs, not a dad with a horse torso.
So this kid, played by what's his face from Stranger Things, the guy with
one of them,
pick your favourite
one of them,
pick a good child actor, by which we mean one of the kids from Stranger Things.
Pick your favourite.
They're the only child actors now.
Like, you can see him like rolling this horse with a bag of arms and legs on his back, and he rolls it back to the homestead, and there at the homestead is his I don't know, their friend who works on the farm but is also happens to be a surgeon from, like, we'll say the Civil War or something, like a field surgeon, and he's like...
No, it's Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman.
Just straight up, like, it's an old, wizened black man.
Okay, yeah, and he says, "Well, you see, these arms and legs are fine." "And so is the rest of the horse. You've done a good job of first aid, like I taught you, well done." And it's like, "I'm sorry about your dad, but maybe there's a way that he can give one last gift to your horse buckle." So
it's gonna be so low to the ground. Which is perfect, because it means the kid can get on.
Yeah, the kid can get on easy then, yeah.
Well, that's going to be later on when he gets over it and then he hears that Calamity Jane is back in town.
But the horse somehow knows that vengeance is needed. Yeah. Like, it's getting something from these human arms and human legs.
And so they set up a trap and they disguise the horse's replaced legs to look like normal horse legs. Yeah. And then at the last minute, the horse goes, not quite galloping, because I imagine it's a sort of awkward waddle, but then rears up and strangles Calamity Jane with its human hands.
Yeah, so the trap, of course, there's one trap in that they've made this one trap. Calamity Jane has set their regular trap for blowing off a horse's legs. Whereas Bucko the horse and his friend Keith is now has these fake stilt legs, and you see, it's an amazing sort of the horse has got a big poncho thing on to kind of disguise the fact that they're not real legs. Mm. And there's an amazing shot where essentially these shotguns come out, it's all slow motion, Zack Snyder style. Mm. And pulls the trigger, and you see the sticks splinter outwards each side, and then the horse almost drops down, but these two hands come from above the
out of the poncho.
They were sort of out of the poncho, they were kind of like bent at the elbows, just like resting there waiting to be released as another set of, and then just, yeah, as you said, the dive happens and then the horse rears up and strangles Calamity Jane. Tom is looking seriously seriously damaged right now.
I mean, I'm all for those visual images. I think we may have, much like Morgan Freeman's Science, I think we may have crossed the line.
Through the wormhole.
Yes.
I think just one last note on this. I think the promotion for the film, you know, you get those like those big pop-up stands where you can put your head through. It's like that, but you can do the arms and legs as well.
Just the arms and legs. There is no
one.
Yeah.
It's one of those party horse heads that people use to do memes.
The tagline is, no one should have been asking whether it could have been done. Whether it should have been done, but the question would be, done.
What could it do? What could it do? What capabilities does this horse have?
Should we move on to the next one?
Yeah, I think. That's enough to keep me awake at night. Oh, yeah. Okay, so we've got quite a sinister sounding one from Marcus Newman that is The Saloon with No Exits.
My only question is, does it have entrances? Is it like a slide?
It's like Cube. A group of people wake up in a saloon with no entrances or exits.
No, I was thinking, well, obviously, right, no matter what we set up, the twist is that this is purgatory.
Yeah.
It's a surprisingly weird trope that I've never thought about before, but you get a lot of movies where, like, because it happened, there's a lot of short films where the purgatory is like a speakeasy or an old-style Western bar. I'm also weirdly thinking of where in Stargate, when Daniel is taken... Okay, for those of you who haven't seen Stargate, never mind. But when he's taken up by the omnipotent alien things, they're in like a 50s-style diner. Like, that's his sort of way of figuring out, like, or existing in a space that doesn't really exist. He creates a 50s-style diner.
Okay,
and it's always that sort of Americana thing, some sort of bar.
The thing is, right, working at a bar feels like purgatory. Sometimes it feels like I have died and not gone to heaven or hell, but just stuck in this chain to this place.
So this film is like a series of Western story tropes, but from the perspective of the bartender in the saloon, and they have no escape.
Yes,
they own the saloon.
The saloon with no exit is just the name of the saloon they're in. Like, that's just like it's like, you know, the Pointing Dog or whatever. You know, it's a sort of it's just a kind of the King George. It's like a pub, but in Wild West, and he's there, and he feels like he cannot get out of this place because it's like a one horse town. People come through, but nobody ever kind of stays or goes from the people who live there. They're entirely funded by just his whole livelihood is other people coming through telling stories.
But he has to deal with the fact that, like, every week there's some sort of shootout or someone is killed who owes him a massive tab.
Yeah.
And he's sick to death of the rudeness of people just going, leave the bottle, and not saying please.
I've got a casting suggestion.
This has to be the most charismatic but downtrodden actor you can think of.
Me.
We'll call you.
I think I can play this part pretty well.
We'll call you, Tom. You know who will be
good
for that?
No. Ryan Gosling. It's a film where Ryan Gosling doesn't speak. It's automatically good. It ranks up there with Drive and Only God Forgives and A Place Beyond the Pines. Like, Ryan Gosling doesn't say anything. He just looks at the camera and you feel so much.
Nicholas Winding Refn branching out into Western territory. Yeah, that does sound pretty good. Sounds like a genuinely good idea for a movie.
Yeah.
You've got to have like one every week, don't you?
Can we make it like a meta? Can it be like a film noir style, like a lot of monologue to, not to camera, but, you know, sort of a lot of voiceover monologue where it's like looking at the saloon doors that go in and out, and he's like, it's not really an exit. No one really leaves. Same guys
go,
every day.
They don't leave.
Same guys every day pull up. They play some cards, pass money from one to the other and back to the other again. Drink whiskey. I don't make any money.
You want the bar scene from Sin City, but focused on Ryan Gosling behind the bar.
Yep.
They take away the bodies, but the ghosts stay forever.
are you sure you don't want to cast me in this?
No, because I have an opportunity to meet Ryan.
Also,
and
right,
just touch him.
Allowing you to hear the feature film would be a way out for you. And we can't have that. You're the muse of the whole thing.
If you want, you can Shyamalan yourself. You can have a character who says something really important and then dies.
Yeah, it's directed by Paul T. Anderson, and it's really bleak, and it just ends with Ryan Gosling getting shot in a riot, in a random gunfight that just breaks out
in his saloon.
And you just see him fade away, and he's just lying on the floor, and as he does, there's someone, like, somebody else comes up to the bar and goes, "Can I get some damn service around here?" And he just kind of shuts his eyes, and there's just a faint frown, and then cut to black, and that's the credits.
Fade to black, fade back up again, you see just slowly, like, floor level, with legs up in the air, but blurred out, him... His legs framed against the light coming through a saloon door as he's being dragged towards the exit of the bar. Oh. Fade back to black. Heartbeat sound effect.
So yeah, that was the saloon with no exits. Yeah. A terrifying...
Existential,
yeah. That might be my favourite one so far.
I don't know, the one with the man arms and legs was pretty good.
Exits... Central.
Stop.
Yeah, there we go. From Ross _ Originals, we've got the old laser spaceship. Yeah.
Well, you know what? You know, I was saying earlier how we often use the wrong genre to just co-opt it.
Yeah.
This is our chance to make good on that promise.
No, he knew it was a Western week.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just went for the old laser spaceship.
Oh, it's a space Western.
Yeah, I guess.
Definitely a genre that's not been plunged to its death.
This has got to be the sort of... A kind of haunted Western type thing where, like, they come across... It's like a Star Trek episode where they come across an abandoned spaceship that's got full of parts, full cargo holds, and then they... Well, it's just Alien.
it's like Cowboys and Aliens...
Which I haven't seen.
But if you took...
It's really good.
If you took the Aliens part of Aliens, instead of the weird shit gold mining ones in that movie...
Right.
You just got H.R. Giger's Aliens.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was kind of like what Alien versus Predator Requiem was about. So instead of...
A shit film.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pitching a shit film here, guys. Help me out.
So what you're saying, this isn't like a space western. This is a western from space.
So you want to take Alien versus Predator 2,
yeah,
and replace the Predators with Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
And we'll just keep the
except it's a shit film, so Carl Urban.
Yeah. Shitty Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
No, I'm just going on like budgetary availability, because Carl Urban is a criminally underpaid actor.
Yeah,
for right, all of the amazing work he did in Chronicles of Riddick.
Yeah, well, my best film ever made. So, talking about budgetary constraints, yes, it's a laser spaceship, but it's just like the BBC. We're going to disguise it as a house to make it into... Basically, they walk into this old house, having been tipped off that there's probably treasure in it. There's a map, and there's a whole lead-up, and then... So I don't know who that is.
Like a sort of... This house has turned up out of the blue, just on the hill of the prairie or whatever.
Yeah. Michelle Gomez is a treasure hunter.
Michelle Gomez
is
Oh, Michelle Gomez, is
Missy from Doctor Who.
And
really?
Yeah.
Oh,
sorry.
Michelle Rodriguez.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They can both be there, to be honest.
Michelle Gomez and Michelle Rodriguez are an unlikely duo of treasure hunters.
But also a hell of a power couple.
I would appreciate them both in something, I think. I would actually appreciate that.
I was thinking, instead of treasure hunters, Michelle Gomez is the sheriff.
Mm.
Michelle Rodriguez is the plucky Latino deputy. And
if you want to conform to racial stereotypes,
Well,
that would be very, like, not the character she always plays. When Michelle Rodriguez is not so much cast in films as just naturally drawn towards, like, bitchy characters with a bit of a past, you don't really want to talk about it, but definitely come round in the end or die.
Yeah, no, I like this. We've got Michelle Rodriguez as the sheriff and the deputy. And they go up to this house that appears on the hill. And at first there's just like, you know, it's quite... They go up late at night and there's wind blowing through the house and the door slams shut behind them. And it looks like a kind of Western horror and then turns into Western alien when they find an egg in the bedroom.
Cool. Yeah, I think the key here is that they've got like a map or some kind of key that's led them to this place.
Oh no! Someone else from the town has gone up to the house. So the town drunk went up to the house and went missing.
Yeah, well, people have been disappearing. It's a really great hook there for it. So they
town drunk played by Owen Wilson.
Oh yes,
slam town drunk man. Yeah, it's amazing.
A house appeared on the hill. Wow.
my only question for this film is which one of them sacrifices themselves for the other.
I want to say.
The sheriff's got to use it as a teaching moment for the deputy. Like, sometimes when everything's on the line, you've got to put yourself on the line.
Yeah,
the town.
Michelle Gomez has to die. Basically, is what we're saying. We're all agreed that Michelle Gomez has to die.
And just to put the button on the nose, like the town is called Sacrifice.
So she says, I'm gonna kill myself for sacrifice.
No. Can the town be called Pathos?
No. She's like,
that's the name of the horse.
She's like
the Michelle Gomez ride.
She's dying from like acid or whatever as she jumped in front of it because the alien was gonna.
She's gotta pull it in front of the laser gun. That's on the ship.
Oh, right, okay. She's gonna Goku it.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
She jumps in front of the laser.
Well, no. She holds the alien in place in front of the laser.
Yeah.
I referenced a very powerful scene from Dragon Ball Z.
and I would
thank you to appreciate it.
I've just had a wild thought. What if this is this kind of like the spaceship from Independence Day in that it can only shoot directly down? Right? And...
That is an amazing flaw in this.
I had never realised that design before.
So you've got Michelle Gomez. They get into the house. They discover this egg. Scary alien things happen, right? Mm. They realise that... You know, Owen Wilson's been face-hugged, there's been more of them burst out, all that stuff's been going on. Then she realises, oh my god, the only way to destroy this alien is impervious to normal weapons, because it just regenerates itself. What we need to do, at this point they've discovered that it's an alien vessel, the facade is gone from the inside, and she's like, I think I've figured out that you can make it blast into space and then fire downwards with the laser. So she, you know, kind of messes with the controls. This whole house from the outside just blasts into space.
And Michelle Rodriguez is in the cockpit of the ship while Michelle Gomez is baiting the alien.
On the ground, yeah.
Yeah, and while the alien's got her grappled, like, she's like, You're gonna have to kill me, Michelle Rodriguez's character. Oh, we didn't give them names. Just deputy. Deputy.
No. That's the first time she uses her actual name.
As opposed to calling her deputy.
Because there's a...
So, she says, you're gonna have to kill me, Michelle Rodriguez's character.
Michelle Rodriguez. Is that Michelle Rodriguez's choice, or Michelle Gomez's power move choice?
Well, no, it was about earning the respect of Michelle Gomez, who's a hard ass.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Michelle Rodriguez isn't the hard ass in this one.
No,
we're casting her against type. That's the only reason she'll agree to this movie, for nothing that we can pay her.
Yeah, she goes around, like, fainting all the time until...
Oh, I declare! She's a Southern Belle.
Oh, I declare, do get that thing off that man's face.
How did I get this job as a deputy? I was a debutante before. I signed on as a debutante.
That's it. Podcast over. We've won podcast.
So
she blasts down, kills the alien.
Big explosion of this hill next to what do we call it? Sacrifice.
Yeah.
And then John Goodman, who's the mayor of the town, runs up the hill. This is a smoking crater, and he's like, "There's gold in that hill." And there's a hoedown.
There's a B plot where the town is running out of money.
Yeah, that's saved.
Right.
And as the smoke clears, there's Michelle Rodriguez, who did have a big dress on and, like, you know, was a fine and dandy Southern belle, and now is like face smeared with blood. What's called colours alien blood?
Well, it's just acid. Yeah.
Acid, yeah. So she, her face
is scarred
irreparably. Like, irreversibly, unless you can find Morgan Freeman somewhere in the desert.
And we're slowly building a shared universe where Morgan Freeman is a doctor who just roams around the desert doing weird, weird
unspeakable acts of science.
I'm going to have to apologise to Tom for that. I just completely forgot that's going to ruin the continuity of the podcast. But oh well. Those were the only successful pictures so far. You probably used those.
Yeah. So, yeah, moving on. Right. Do you want me to read out some more? Ones we couldn't get to. Some more quick honourable mentions. From Owen Hughes, we had Rooty Tooty Point and Shooty.
That's a musical, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's Seven Brides
Rooty
Seven
Tooty Point and Shooty. From Josh Cooper, we had The Other East. From Toby James, we had The Adequate Six.
It's just some guys who are like all right at their jobs.
Yeah.
So some cowboys.
It's a slice of life western.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They seem to be good at. Well, I mean, all right.
Pretty good at wrangling
cows.
Cows, yeah. Yeah. And then you know, there's a storm. Some of them get lost, but not that many.
And from Joe Newbury, we have West Wing. just the West Wing.
It's like a Western mythical fantasy where they ride like manticores.
Griffins,
yeah.
We also had quite a trend this week of
bonus round.
Bonus quick fire good, the bad and the ugly references. So from Jamie D'Artic and Hagen, we had the alright, the mediocre and the bemusing. From Conor Lavelle, we had the ugly, the ugly and the ugly.
I like that one actually.
That is a Western retelling of Cinderella.
It's just grotesque slime pulling itself through the desert.
From Sarah Harrison, we got the good, the bad and Theresa May. Topical.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely her looks we need to criticise.
From Toby James, we got the good, the bad and the great personality. We have another one from Sarah Harrison, going on this sort of spaghetti western vibe, a fistful of book tokens.
It's about a travelling library in the Wild West.
A school teacher's story.
I was about to say that that's me going into Waterstones and going, just give me a book! Because I've got like tons of just one stamp on each one. Yeah. I keep forgetting they have a loyalty card.
Please!
Yeah. And Conor Lavelle, a fistful of fists. So thanks everyone for those wonderful Western titles. Again, if you'd like to contact us to get your titles in on facebook.com/ Life's a Pitch podcast or on Twitter @ Life's a Pitch show as well.
You can also, of course, go to soundcloud.com/ Life's a Pitch podcast to find all of our podcasts that we've done ever. There's quite a few of them, including our ancient gritty reboot miniseries and all the deleted scenes episodes, which come out on Monday, and a ton of playlists for the various guests we've had on multiple times and our favourites. It's a wonderland. Go and explore.
Yeah. You can also find us on iTunes, Acast.
All the other places that you find podcasts,
just
usually.
Podcast places.
Flipping Spotify, the dicks.
Yeah.
Last Pitch is brought to you by our awesome patrons over on patreon.com, Ross Originals, Spanky Brandon Spanky Mills, and of course My Waste of Talent, all of whom provide us with the means we need to keep the show going and to make it better. You can go over to patreon.com to find out where you can get a load of extra bonus content and really great stuff.
If you don't have money spare to give us, you can help us out. That's a terrible way of putting that.
If you don't have the minimal sum of $1 that you need to become a patron, then fair enough, you could go out and tell your friends.
Yeah, you could share the podcast. One way of sharing the podcast would be to, when you go to a restaurant, grab a menu, grab a pen, write the URL.
Cross off all the other menu, all the other meals.
Yeah, yeah. And just, you're having that today.
In fact, yeah, it's, you just...
SoundCloud.com/LiveToPitchPodcast.
Bring Tipex, lots of it.
Add it to the specials board.
But yeah.
Yeah. Price, free.
Like, how else can you share podcasts, guys?
We tend to just run lots of community-oriented events like the Sheffield Improv Jam last Thursday of every month down at Dina in Town Centre, and then advertise our podcast, the Strike Comedy Podcast, facebook.com/strikecomedy, soundcloud.com/strikecomedy.
Yeah, just strike.
Yeah.
Just strike. Strike. Wow. Yeah, we got that one down. That's why you intentionally misspell your own name.
First dibs on Twitter handles.
Yeah, and of course you can leave us a review on iTunes, or you could do a live stage reenactment of one of our podcast episodes.
Wow!
In the park.
That's what listeners could do, right?
So,
yeah.
Go and do it.
Okay, so on with today's main pitch from Charlie Gascoigne. We have "This Town Ain't Big Enough for the 12 of Us."
Cheaper by the dozen, 3. I rest my case. Nothing more to be said. Yeah, Steve Martin and family move to a Wild West town.
It's like a modern day Wild
yeah,
West.
Yeah, no, it's him and his family get like in some weird contractual relationship. They get hired to be like a family at one of those like historical reenactment towns.
That's it. Steve Martin says, "Oh man, the kids are getting older." Hmm. Some of them are of adult age but can't afford a new house because we're quite poor. We need a bigger house, and he sees in the property listings 3 houses, plural. 3 houses, plural, available for a very cheap price. Free clothes provided. You see that his kids are running out of their clothes are wearing out, the shoes. Someone comes up to him and throws... Steve Martin's got a long beard now because he's a little bit older. Throws a shoe at him and gets stuck in his beard. He's like, "Ah, that happened." And then he says, "Right, that's it. We're moving to Wildo Weston."
Wildo Weston.
Right. No, that's the name of the mayor.
Yes. In fact, that's the guy who has put this listing up.
So I've got kind of a weird cheaper by the dozen meets Westworld vibe here.
Yep.
Yeah.
As in the cast of cheaper by the dozen. Mm. So but they're all older, so we need to get like just we need to cast these 12 people, this family of 12. But the Olsen twins are cheaper by the dozen.
Let's say yes.
Yeah, let's have them again.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, so they move.
Also,
they move to this Wild West theme park.
Yeah,
because Steve Martin's run out of money.
The 2008 economic crash was not kind to a family of 12.
No, it wasn't.
To the cheaper by the dozen family.
Yeah. I mean, they were. It turns out they had it.
Yeah, well, no, they had a massive like subprime mortgage on their house, and it was one of the first ones to go. Yeah, that's right. I watched The Big Short.
Steve Martin got a tip off, and it said that buying these unsecured loans is a good idea.
Yeah, he got stung.
So. Yeah, so they move to this Wild West theme park where they inhabit it for money and also have a place to live.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing about the Wild West theme park is everything is Wild West prices. So you've got like, they get paid in gold doubloons, they pay rent in gold doubloons, and, oh, no, you know what I mean, not the doubloons, but the sort of, what are they, not the pirate
silver dollars.
Silver, the gold nuggets, like the gold rush, it's that sort of business.
What I think happens is that they find gold, actual gold underneath the theme park.
Yes.
And then the person who owns the theme park, who's hired them, is
Wild
like
Wildo Weston.
Wildo Weston, who pretends to be the mayor and actually is the owner of the theme park, is like, well, that's mine. And they go to war in the theme park over the actual gold that's been found. There's an actual gold rush in the fake Wild West theme park. Yeah,
turns into a Wild West animatronic Home Alone. Steve Martin.
That sounds like the best tagline ever. Like, it's a Wild West animatronic Home Alone.
So,
best
like,
review, even. Five
stars. I want to say the scene where Steve Martin finds the gold. His job is taking the place of an animatronic when they break down. So, he's there with a pickaxe in this fake mine.
Yeah.
Underground, just swinging and then going down to a rock and swinging. But he gets tired, and obviously he's letting the pick actually hit the rocks. And eventually, he's actually, over the course of several weeks, which is how long it takes to fix an animatronic, apparently, he ends up digging a hole for himself. And it's quite a funny bit, the fact that he just finds himself
actually mining, because it's easier than pretending.
Yeah, he's actually mining and finds himself at the end of a work day, you know, it's a cutaway and then it cut back and he's at the bottom of this big hole and he doesn't know how he got here. And then when they
find
come to,
actual gold.
Yeah, when they come to pull him out with a rope ladder.
So I'm thinking, when they find the gold and the mayor challenges them
to a
the
duel.
Whole family to a duel.
No. I've got the B plot first. The really obvious B plot. Is who, like, obviously Steve Martin has a daughter of some age.
One or both of the Olsen twins.
Yeah. one of his kids.
They
obviously
didn't put the same baby.
one of his kids obviously falls in love with Wildo Weston's kid.
Mm.
And they are what's going to eventually bring the families together somehow.
So who's playing Wildo Weston?
John Goodman.
Absolutely, 100%.
Any Wild West mayor, authority figure.
Is that a little bit too sinister? Like, after watching
10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah. John Goodman scares me.
Well, then that's even better. Because it turns out...
I thought we were going for family friendly.
We are. Until we find out that John Goodman himself is an animatronic.
He's got a kid.
Yeah. That's the mystery.
Okay.
This kid's film brought to you by M. Night Shyamalan. It turns out they're all animatronics. It is reverse Westworld.
It's cheaper by the Westworld. Yeah. I'm thinking, because they find out that John Goodman is a robot. They also start to question whether or not each of them are robots.
We have been replaced by robots in a kind of body snatchers way. Or I guess.
But what would be the point of giving them money to live there if they were just going to replace them?
No, they get really concerned when Harrison Ford and Ryan Gosling turn up and start putting them, sort of testing them. As far as I'm concerned, if someone's going to talk about robots who don't know they're robots, it's Blade Runner.
Yeah. Right, so it's Cheaper by the Dozen, Westworld, Blade Runner. What else? What other fucking film can
we There will be blood.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Well, it's not gold, it's oil. It's, yeah.
World's End.
Pirates
of the Caribbean.
No, but Johnny Depp does have a cameo as an animatronic, as a reference to Pirates of the Caribbean being based on a theme park ride.
He busts in as Tonto from The Lone Ranger. And everyone's like, get out.
So I'm thinking,
take your hat with you and go.
Because these robots are trying, right, obviously because they're evil robots, they're trying to take over the world slowly from this western town.
I think you're just stereotyping evil robots. Why can't they just want to live and have a shit ton of gold?
Yeah, they Actually, yeah, no. The robots do figure out, right, that they can have this little paradise to themselves and start to sort of work out which ones, because they all look like each other and they've all been replaced by actual Cheaper by the Dozen cast.
So the Cheaper by the Dozen cast are bought in to basically sub in for when the animatronics break down, because they're very the Cheaper by the Dozen cast don't know until like halfway through the film, but the animatronics are actual sentient robots, but they keep breaking down, like they're still in development, and John Goodman bot is the leader. He's the first sentient robot, and he's building a town full of other sentient robots, but they just want to live in peace and harmony and then eventually take over the world.
He's a sentient robot that wants to build sentient human lookalike robots, but he doesn't have any creativity.
No, all of the Cheaper by the Dozen cast get like slowly forced into costume and pretending to be these animatronics that they're replacing, and that's where the confusion comes from. Of like, there's the Cheaper by the Dozen cast running around, and then there's the animatronic actual sentient AI robots. All look like them.
Back
all
in the like actual,
Cheaper by the Dozen cast. Yeah.
Back in the actual Wild West.
Meanwhile, 300 years ago.
Yeah, a genius came up with the first computer, steam-powered computer, that could learn and fuel itself. But obviously a learning process for a computer that doesn't understand anything...
And is run on steam.
...a long time. 200, maybe 300 years.
The whole theme park is a sentient AI.
So it started learning. No, the whole... That consciousness... is John Goodman. It's taken him this long to want to procreate. He's figured out his reason for being. And all he knows is the Wild West.
And that's why he constantly looks so exasperated.
Yes. And he's started doing this. And then as people come in and he's just using the resources around him, he's like, oh, there's humans over there. They could sub in for our animatronics when they go down.
What a better way to perfect the robot's ability to blend in with humans than to make the humans behave like robots and see where the differences are.
Exactly. And then
that was surprisingly profound.
And then there's a whole like thematic thing where as the Cheaper by the Dozen people start going missing and being replaced by animatronics, there's like, oh, we were hired to be replacements for animatronics. Little did we know that animatronics would be replacing us.
Yeah.
And we need a denouement.
So in a world where the real people have to kill the robots, the Olsen twins are fucked. They don't know who to kill. They're just like,
No. That's the small post-credits twist ending is much like... one of the more recent series of Doctor Who. One of the surviving Olsen twins is a robot, and one of them's the actual original. But it's the same one. It's the one and her copy.
Yes. Mary Kate and Mary Eight.
And they have a series of spin-offs.
I forgot that the Olsen twins were in Doctor Who.
So how the hell does this resolve? Like, do the robots and the humans have to settle their differences?
It's a kids' movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
not anymore.
It's a mind-bending sci-fi kids' movie.
It's a dark kids' movie.
They have to settle their differences. Oh, no, because one of the twins has to... Or two of the twins have to die. One of each of the twins still has to die.
The Hunger Games is a kids' movie. It's a teen movie.
Well, yeah, but in that case, we need to have a brooding, edgy character who we follow.
Dude, no, right. The Olsen Toy Twins. Story. Think about Toy Story. It grew up with its audience. So is Cheaper by the Dozen.
Whereas with Toy Story, we grew up with Andy going to college.
Yeah.
Cheaper by the Dozen. Family loses home. Becomes animatronic robot.
Cheaper by the Dozen will age you.
It's relatable. Yeah, that happens to everyone who lost their home in the 2008 housing crisis.
It's a modern day story about you know, one family's desperation in the light of, you know, severe financial troubles.
Yeah, especially
the overall
it's a metaphor.
Yeah, it's a big, big Marxist propaganda piece, because it's all about about employees being reified, like reduced to the functions that they
of
perform.
The machine. It's, yeah. Also, you know, the machination of labor. Like, yeah. we don't have to. There aren't enough blue collar jobs in America anymore, guys. The Rust Belt is dying.
yeah, the rise of automation and stuff. They work out that the way to save it is for humans and robots to basically switch places.
Trick. Yeah, I tell you what, John Goodman teaches them a valuable lesson of how to impersonate one of those screens at McDonald's that does the job of the server.
I'm just like, at the end, Steve Martin finds this giant, like, steam-powered machine underneath the town, which has got John Goodman's face just on a massive projector screen.
Yeah.
And he's like, you might have killed some of my family. I am not sure which ones are alive and which ones have been replaced by robots.
I'm going to kill you.
And then he does a few impressions of stuff, because that's what Steve Martin does, and then throws a, like, giant whiskey bottle at it. That it destroys.
He takes his pickaxe from the animatronic mine.
No, yeah.
Shoves it through his nose.
He could cover it in oil as well.
Yeah, if he wants.
Yeah. Burns it down in oil.
And then.
That'd be a fitting end to John Goodman's mayor character.
Yeah. I mean, we wanted it to be like all nice makeup. We can all live in harmony, but. Don't worry, we'll just put a pickaxe through his face.
Not with robots, no, you can't. And like,
I'm sensing Tom's fears.
There's no happy ending with robots. No.
One day bars will just be vending machines. And then I won't have a job.
Yeah, no, and like, as the steam-powered machine is like being destroyed.
Yeah.
Like, this is where we cut back to John Goodman strangling one of the Olsen twins, just like, and then as he malfunctions, he's like, oh, no, I just wanted to live in peace with robots.
My mainframe. He says this out loud, and everyone goes, that sounds about right. That's like technology, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, this film should be entirely technologically inaccurate.
Yeah.
So, like, every single joke has to have something to do with RAM and chips.
I have only one question at this point.
Wow.
Where's the Chevy Chase cameo?
Exactly. No. Same damn question.
No. My question is more aimed at us as people, which is, between the four of us, can we name more than a quarter of the cast of Cheaper by the Dozen?
I think I can.
Categorically, no. I've never seen a single one of them. I just saw the trailers and I went, "Yeah, I've seen it. Seen the film."
Yeah, and that
was this did town.
Did we come up with an ending for it apart from John Goodman?
Mainframe destroyed, Alton twin, Mary Kate and Mary 8.
Well, yeah, he says as he smashes, as he kicks the animatronic shell of John Goodman off his daughter, he says, looks like this town's only big enough for the dozen of us.
Yeah, the thing is, it sort of ends on a bit of a cliffhanger, because he still doesn't know which of his kids are real and which ones are animatronic, because it's all a setup for Cheaper by the Dozen 4.
Yeah, he doesn't know whether he's real. Actually, no, he would have seen either a robotic mashed up version of himself or a bloodied version of himself, so he will have known.
Yeah, in the kill den.
Yeah,
underneath the town.
in the kill box.
And they've got all this gold, so they can leave. Or oil. They discovered oil. Something.
They discovered something of worth.
Yeah.
So they could buy the same house they bought in the first one. It goes back to the beginning.
Until Cheaper by the Dozen 4, Living Space.
It's a sequel prequel to Cheaper by the Dozen 1.
They're in a time loop.
Yeah, in Cheaper by the Dozen 4, they get rescued by Bill Murray.
Yeah, but in all the mod 3 Cheaper by the Dozens, it's always the latest, like, economic hardship.
Yes. Yep.
I love the idea of them being rescued by Bill Murray, who's like, this has happened before, and then Tom Cruise appears like, yeah, I know.
Which is the segue into Cheaper by the Dozen 4 Living Space, which is where they blast their house into space to try and try and find more expansion room for a bigger family.
And bump up against a family of 12 aliens with Dolph Lundgren as the dad?
Dolph Lundgren. And Rutger Hauer as the mum.
So yeah, that was This Town Ain't Big Enough for the 12 of Us. Trying to think of a shorter title.
I would actually watch that for sure.
Yeah.
Was that from Gaz?
Yeah, that was from Gaz, yeah. Thank you for that one.
So that was Cheaper by the Dozen
three.
One of them. I'm sure there's ones we're not aware of that got made and
direct to video.
So anyway, that was This Town Isn't Big Enough for the 12 of Us. Thank you to
Charlie Gascoigne.
Charlie Gascoigne for giving us that title. And of course, thank you for the Strike Boys for coming on to the... I'm just going to call you collectively because...
No problem. Thanks for having us. Yeah. It's been a blast.
Yeah. Have you on any time as well? Yeah, no.
We'll have to have you on again. That was a lot of fun. So, guys, how can people find you on the lines?
Facebook.com/StrikeComedy. SoundCloud.com/Strike. You can find us in real life at the Sheffield Improv Jam down at Dina.
That's how I found you.
Last Thursday of every month.
I have heard you on previous episodes talking about improv, so I hope you have piqued some of your listeners' interest.
Yeah, I think...
You've definitely spoken about it.
Yeah, I've definitely talked about it, yeah. I've wondered what I've talked about, actually.
You've talked about some of the weird shit you've done in scenes.
Come down
and find us at the Sheffield Improv Jam or Strike Comedy's next gig will likely be at...
Club Wow Wow
in July, which is at Dina Venue. Mm-hmm.
Go and do that. I've seen the Strike Guys perform and it is a great deal of fun.
Check us out. We'll be releasing some of our clips from our latest show on YouTube, youtube.com/StrikeBoChampions, which we will link to on our Facebook, so go there instead.
Because that has more vowels than you think it does.
Yeah, it does.
All the links will be in the description of this episode on the SoundCloud page if you want to go check them out. Yeah, because that was a great show. It felt scripted, which is what improvisers want to hear, I think.
It's a compliment. Yeah, we'll take it as a compliment.
Yeah, it felt very, very like... tight. That's
I do like feeling tight.
So on that note, thank you all for listening. Remember to go and check us out on Facebook and Twitter and all the other places in the world. And until all of you are replaced by animatronic versions of yourselves by John Goodman, I've been Matt Turner.
I've been Tom McGrath.
I've been Alex Not Safe Work Keen.
And I've been Bobby LGBTerrific Anderson.
We'll see you next time. Remember who pitched it.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.